beautiful, beautiful piece on Rosh Hashanah from the Sfas Emes, and he is talking something very specific to this year regarding shofar and shamans. So this, I'll give a little introduction. If anybody heard the WhatsApp today, I spoke about that a little bit, but in very short. But the point is like this. The shofar is the key to Rosh Hashanah, right? If you look around, wherever you're going to look, you'll see that the shofar, what makes Hashem go from the seat of judgment to the seat of mercy, from Midas HaDin to Midas HaRachman. When does that happen in Rosh Hashanah? That happens with the shofar. We blow the shofar, and Hashem goes from, so to speak, the seat of judgment to the seat of mercy. Everything that happens, the only plan, the only saving grace that we have to get by this day of judgment in a good way with mercy is by blowing the shofar. Now, the rabbis came along, and they said that we're worried on Shabbos that if we say you should blow the shofar, you may come to carry it in the street. You may forget to bring it before Shabbos to the shul. And you're going to end up, maybe you won't have an Eruv. And you're going to carry it through the street. So therefore, what did they say? The rabbis came along and said, no shofar on Shabbos. Now, that's fine. But the question is, what are we going to do now? We lost the shofar. So, I don't think we...
Hashem sits there on his seat of judgment and says, I don't hear any sound. So... He doesn't move, or does he go to the seat of judgment anyway?
That's the question, right? That's the question. That's what we're going to try and figure out. What exactly happens when Rosh Hashanah is on a Shabbos? Because like I say, this question hit me this year more than it normally does. But what is the game plan this year? I was learning so much Sfas Emes before Rosh Hashanah, and every piece he's talking about, the shofar. And then I was like, hey, but what are we going to do on Shabbos? So the rabbi said we shouldn't do it. Okay, fine, no shofar. But what are we going to do now? What's the game plan? We don't have a shofar. So how are we going to get it? It's a question. I believe it's a question. There must be some sort of system that they couldn't just leave us hanging. They can't just say, okay, we're taking away your life support, but just fend for yourself. There must be some sort of replacement, right? Can't be. Mm-hmm. It can't be that they just said, all right, this year is going to be a rough one. There's no shofar for you. The Gemara writes, any year that they don't blow shofar in the beginning of the year, the end of the year is bad. It's a bad year, so it can't be this is what they did first. That's the question. So, we're going to go back.
That doesn't sound like, I heard the shofar last year, and this year is ending in a very interesting way, so.
That is true. I will comment on your comment that we don't always know what's good and bad. Right. So, very possibly.
That's why I said it was interesting.
Right. No, I liked your choice of word. I heard that. I heard your choice of word. Right. It's, we really don't know. For all you know, if this, without going into it now, but if COVID caused many of us to have some early thoughts of teshuva, right? I'll mention to you, the first Shabbos of COVID, the first one when I was at home, we're not going to shul, and it was so fresh and like raw. And that Shabbos was, for me, it felt like Yom Kippur. Just like the whole experience of like davening at home in my basement and cut off. It really, that Shabbos, like I came out of it like I just done through Yom Kippur. And then I was thinking afterwards that what an opportunity to have a Yom Kippur Shabbos in the middle of the year. Right? When did we ever have that? So not to say that, all parts of it are good. Obviously not. We don't like it when people die. That's not what I mean to say. But the point is that if COVID caused many of us to have early, instead of waking up at Elul, which we do hopefully, or waking up today or the day before Rosh Hashanah, but if we were able to wake up 4 months early, it's a gift. I think that's a real gift that we got. Again, not to say it's all a gift, but the aspect of it is a good. Mm-hmm. So let's make it up. I'm going to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the shofar, and then we'll go into how this works. If we understand a little bit what the shofar does, we'll understand how it works this year. Now, that's the route that we're going to take. If we understand the general concept, what is the shofar? What is the shofar doing? Then we'll know this year how we have a solution. What's our game? So he writes like this. He writes, Ashri ha'am yodei sirur. right? The famous verse in Tehillim that we say before the blowing of the shofar, it says, praiseworthy are the people that know the teruah. What does it mean that they know the teruah? They know it. So the Zohar Kaddish, the Holy Zohar writes, the Zohar Kaddish Pirshu, the Holy Zohar explains, what it means that they know the teruah means they know how to break the teruah. They know how to break it down. They know how to take the teruah, the sound, the broken sound, and they know how to break it. They know how to break the sound of the shofar. That's the words of the Zohar, and now we need to try and explain it. So he says like this. He says, the Issa were taught by our sages, Keshav B'nai Yisrael, when the Jewish people poke in the shofar. When we blow the shofar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands from the Kisei Din, from the seat of judgment, but Yoshua Kisei Rachmam, and he goes to the seat of mercy. And how does that work? What is this magic formula that we blow the shofar and Hashem goes from one to the other? So, Eninu Dichsev, the Pasuk writes, Teruah Malachta. What is the translation of the word Teruah? What is the actual translation of the word Teruah? We know what it means, it's a type of shofar sound. But what does the actual word mean? What does Teruah mean? So he says, the translation, Rashi says this really. It's a quote from Rashi. Rashi writes, the translation of the word teruah means ratzon, desire, will. Pretty amazing. The translation of the word teruah, what we blow teruah. Mm-hmm. Translation of that word teruah means will, desire, ratzon. Now what does that mean? How does that come in? What does desire have to do with the shofar? He says like this, v'hine ba'amas. We have to know, in truth, ritzono yisparach. What is Hashem's will? This is, I believe, you know, a fundamental point in our mindset as we go into Rosh Hashanah. What is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's true desire? Does he want to judge us? Does he want to punish us? Or does he want to have mercy on us? Does he want to have kindness for us? What is his desire? Of course, his desire is only the Rachamim V'tova, to give us good and mercy. He has no other interest. All Hashem wants to do, he has zero interest in judging us. We're coming to this day of judgment where he's going to weigh us and look at what we did and every action and every thought and every speech. And if we think that's what he wants to do, then we don't have it right. He doesn't, his desire, his deepest desire that we could access is his desire to bestow kindness and goodness and mercy on his people. Everyone. So, why is that judgment? If that's true, why is that judgment? So, v'hamishpa hu l'tovu. The judgment is just for our good. Why is the judgment for our good? So it doesn't really explain over here, but I'm going to quote you from another piece and from a lot from the Ramchal and what Moshe Shapiro talks about. And here's the basic idea. Hashem's desire was to bestow goodness to us. Now, the best way to bestow goodness to us was to give us free will. To give us bechir. To give us, why is that? Because if we have free will, that's true goodness. Because then we could truly choose to accept Hashem upon us. And then the work that we do in this world is ours. We own it because we chose to do it. So if I want to give you a gift, it's a lot better for me to, for example, give you a job and hire you and give you a salary than for me just to give you, all right, you need money, I'll give you $30,000. A lot better if I'd actually set you up with a job that you could own and you could earn your salary. So Hashem wanted to bestow goodness. He wanted to give us $1 million. And he said, what's the best way to give these people $1 million? The best way is to give them free will that they could choose not to work for me. And if they choose to work for me, then they'll get $1 million. That's the way he set it up. Now, right? So far so good? Now that he gives us free will, there's a problem. Because what is going to motivate us to make the right choice? What's going to motivate us if there's no judgment? If it's just, if it's just do what you like and it's free for all. So what is going to motivate somebody from saying, we know the background is that will be good for us. What if the guy wakes up one morning and he says, today I'm not in the mood. It's going to motivate me to do that. So the system's not going to work. He wants to bestow goodness. To bestow goodness, he wants to give us free will. But free will is not going to work because there's no motivation. What's my motivation? So for that, at this point, comes judgment. right? You see the picture? At this point comes judgment. And judgment says, now I'm going to set up a system where you're going to be judged for what you do. That means that you know that everything you do during the year will one day be judged. Once a year, at the end of our lives, there's a big judgment. And we're going to be judged. Today we're judged in a certain sense. And that's going to deter us from making wrong choices. So, do you see how the whole picture has changed? Instead of saying that Hashem's desire is to judge us, that's truly not the case. He doesn't have a desire to judge us. His desire is one thing, which is, what's his desire? Josh? What is his desire? What's his actual desire? We're going to have to, whoops.
I moved.
What is Hashem's desire? If you would ask, based on what we're saying, what does he want to do? What he wants to do is one thing, which is?
To give us.
One more time?
He wants to give us.
He wants to give us. He wants to give us mercy, goodness, wealth, spiritual love, connection to him, bounty, health, you name it. That's all he wants to do. But the best way to do that is to give us free will. The only way to make free will work is to set up a system of judgment. So that's why we have to be judged. So when we come to the day of judgment, we have to realize this day is a crucial day, but not the true desire. It's a crucial day in making the system work. Because without this day, it would be a free will. But you want to know, is that his deepest desire? It's only his desire to make his deepest desire come true, which is to give. So what's that now? Now, having said that, Ashrei ha'am, yodei isura, praiseworthy are the people that know the secret of this shofar. And the Zohar writes means they know how to break it. You know what it means, they know how to break it? They know how to bypass the system. How do we get HaKadosh Baruch Hu to go from a seat of judgment to the seat of mercy? What's to stop him from judging us? This is unbelievable. This Fasamas write this, but I heard this a lot from Rav Moshe Shapira. If Hashem truly wants, what he really wants is that we should accept him as king. Now, in order to make us do that, he has to judge us. What happens if I tell him, very simple thing, Hashem, skip the judgment. I'm ready to accept you as my king. That's what you really wanted. You really wanted to give me goodness, and the best way to do that is for me to accept you on my own. And you have to make judgment just to make me do that. But skip that. I'm here. I'm ready to accept you. Mm-hmm. I don't need the deterrent. I'm here. So then, there's no need anymore for the judgment. Because the judgment was only needed to get us to the place where we would make a correct choice. And that correct choice is to accept Hashem and our own as king. And that's when he could bestow goodness to us. So if we just come and tell him that we want to accept you as our king, so then that's the point. That's all he wants. And then he doesn't have to sit on the seat of judgment anymore. Because he only sat there to get us to the point where we would accept him as king using our free will. But if we use our free will correctly on Rosh Hashanah, then we bypass the system. And Hashem doesn't need anymore to sit on the seat of judgment because the whole point of judgment was to get us to accept him. But we accepted him. So let's go back to mercy. But that's what I always wanted to do. Isn't that amazing? So when
you don't need the shofar?
Well, hold on a second. How do we access? One more piece, which I didn't say. It's not as simple as that. How do we get to the place where we access HaKadosh Baruch Hu's true Ratzah? How do we bypass the system? We accept him as king and we bypass the place of the judgment and we get HaKadosh Baruch Hu's. And we tell him that your true desire is to give us good. How do we get there? The way to get there is with the shofar. And the reason is, because when we express our true desire, that arouses HaKadosh Baruch Hu's true desire. Hashem won't go back to his original desire until he sees us go to our true desire. When we blow the shofar without words, it's without any words. Without no words, it's just blowing out the ruach, the wind, the essence of the person to cry out to God. That what are we crying out? That what we really, really want deep down without words, just a cry. What I really want is to connect to you and become as close to you as I can. When we do that, that reminds God, that reminds HaKadosh Baruch Hu what his true desire is. And says, I see my people's desire, and my desire wasn't to judge these people. My desire was to give them mercy. So let me go to the seat of mercy and be merciful to them. So when we show Hashem what our true desire is, he has no need anymore to sit on the seat of judgment. Because that was just to get us to the point where we would tell him our true desire. But we did it with the shofar. When we do it with the shofar, he goes to his true desire. What is his true desire? What is his teruah, his ratzon, his desire, his will? Is to give us mercy. So Hashem moves over to the seat of mercy. On the day of judgment, to get HaKadosh Baruch Hu to move to that place of the seat of judgment, the only way to do that is with a shofar. You have to realize this is the court case. Today is the big day. Today is Mr. Judgment Day. You're going to get Hashem to skip the system of judgment and go to his desire. The only way you're going to do that is when we blow the shofar, we show our true desire. But comes along Shabbos, and we don't need to blow. Comes along Shabbos. Sweet. Imagine. Yeah, L'chaim. Comes along Shabbos. And L'chaim, sweet. And all of you. Comes along Shabbos. Now, he says some Kabbalistic reference, which we're not going to go into because...
Let's do it.
The reason is because I don't know it. Not because I could say that I'm not saying because I'm not allowed. But for the sake of honesty, I will tell you because I don't know it. But what is happening to the mukven? Months, yeah.
Anyone want to go up to the mountains to the lake tonight?
Tomorrow I'm going to the mukven. Tomorrow.
Does that work?
Well, I actually went in Lakewood. Not so long ago. Yeah, back to business. So the point is like this. The Zohar reveals, and there's some Zmiris about it, but on the day of Shabbos, on its own, the essence of the day of Shabbos reveals an outpouring of desire of Hashem to his people. Mm-hmm. Of mercy. Shabbos is a day of mercy. Shabbos is not a day of judgment. So when it comes to Shabbos, we don't need to remind Hashem with our shofar what his true desire is. Shabbos alone, in its essence, inherently is a day of mercy. So to speak, almost that Hashem doesn't even start off on the day of judgment, on the seat of judgment. Mm-hmm. He's already on the seat of mercy on Shabbos. So in the week, we need the shofar victim because it's a day of judgment and it's the week, and the week is a scary time. And how are we going to get Hashem to move to the seat of mercy? We need to remind him of what his true desire is. And how are we going to remind him on such a day? We show him our true desire, we're going to blow the shofar. But Shabbos, we don't need to do that. Shabbos, it's a day of mercy. Shabbos is, every Shabbos is an outpouring of ratzon. What do we say by mancha? What do we say by Shabbos mancha before we bring out the Sefer Torah? Right, what verse do we say? What verse do we say? Does anybody know this? Right after we finish Ashrei Valitzia, that's on Ma'ariv. That's also, it's related. But right after we, before we bring out the Sefer Torah, by Shabbos Mancha, we say a verse. Pasuk from Tehillim. Vani tefilasi. L'cha Hashem, my prayer is to you. What the next word is? L'cha Hashem. Ace Ratzon. My prayer to you is now, Hashem, because now is called an Ace Ratzon, a time of Ratzon. Every single Shabbos, right? The Zohar writes, we know that the time of Shalosh Shittos, right? The third meal of Shabbos, after Mincha, is called Ra'ava the Rabban. It's called Desire of Desire. It's the biggest time of desire from Hashem. Shabbos is a day where Hashem is always focused on what his true desire is. Mm-hmm. We don't need the shofar on Shabbos. Because we have Shabbos. That's the point. They weren't afraid to take away the shofar on Shabbos. They weren't afraid to do it. What's going to be with us? What do you mean? You guys have Shabbos itself. You got nothing to worry about. You got nothing to worry. You want to know how you're going to arouse Hashem's true desire? Every Shabbos, this is his true desire. It's, so to speak, almost that we luck out when Rosh Hashanah falls on a Shabbos. Because Shabbos is working for us. Mm-hmm. Now, well, there's a part two to this, but just that alone would already be, you know, would already be enough if we just let that sink in. There's a sefer Rabbi Kipper showed me from the Ben Ish Chaim, one of the great Sephardi Kabbalists. But he writes this point exactly. And he writes so much so that when our sages in the Talmud and the Gemara writes that the reason why they said don't blow the shofar on Shabbos is like I said before, because they were worried that we might desecrate the Shabbos by coming to carry it in the street. So he writes, the Ben Ish Chaim writes, that wasn't the real reason. The real reason was that they knew that on Shabbos we didn't need the shofar, like we just said. But they weren't able to give that secret out to the public. So they put up front of it. They said, oh, don't blow the shofar. We're worried you're going to carry it. You know? That's what he writes. They saw this. They saw this inside. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
He's like, don't blow the shofar. You're going to come to carry it. But what their real deeper reason is that you don't give out, you know, deep reasons to the public. You gotta know who you're saying this to. People could totally take that concept and misuse it. Right? You could say, oh, Shabbos, you can do it. I like it. It's time of mercy. It's good to go. So the real reason, what they were really knew was that they don't need the shofar on Shabbos.
Mm.
Now, that's part one. So that's part one.
My wife wants to know how then it got out. How did the secret get out?
It's a good question. I would say a secret getting out means that the general public knows about it. That you give me 30 seconds. What I would say is like this. The entire Zohar, right, the entire Kabbalah, right, the name of it is called a secret. It's called a secret. Now, it's not really a secret because you could just buy one in any store and you could read it. You could even get English translations. It's not really a secret. But what it means is that it's going to be there, but if you want to access it, you're going to have to find yourself a teacher and you're going to have to plug in and you're going to have to really get it, it's a secret. It means you could read the words and you could even list to me the names of all the Sefirot. But it doesn't really mean you know the secret. The secret is when you have somebody who a teacher or a sefer that will open something up, and if you apply yourself correctly, you will get to understand the point that they're trying to say. So all these things, they didn't hide them completely, but they didn't just post it on the walls. They didn't send out like a broadcast that, oh, don't worry guys about shofar, Shabbos. But it's there. It's written down. You just got to. If somebody has a delicate, sensitive soul to understand these things, he will find it, absolutely. So,
what about lulav? Is there something? I'm sure there's something to that too. No.
Yes, I don't know it, but there's got to be. I don't know. There's got to be. You should just know. Before I saw this Fas Amos, I was having a conversation with my father-in-law, past Friday, and I was telling him I didn't see anything. And I was like, what's going to be with shofar and Shabbos? What's the game plan? And I told him, it's got to be that Shabbos takes care of it for us. He said, that just has to be the way it's going to work. And he told me back that, you know, if you're right, then the Sfas Emes would definitely have to write that. So, so you know, you got to find it there. So I was looking and I found it. Here it is. But it's got to be when you... It's got to be, lulav's got to be something too. It's got to be something with that. There has to be there's many places where you have it. For example, when Tisha B'Av falls out on a Shabbos, what do we do? What happens when Tisha B'Av falls out on a Shabbos? We don't fast. We don't mourn. We don't do anything. Almost anything. Now, it's the saddest day of the year. How's that possible? Got to be, and this Fas Amos does talk about, that on the day of Shabbos, you take care of Tisha B'Av in a different way. Because you, almost like beyond it. But it's always got to be, whenever there's a clash, when Shabbos will always knock out some other event, it's always got to be that Shabbos will bypass it a different way. So maybe when I'll look around, maybe see if you see anything, you keep me posted.
And my wife said, except Yom Kippur.
Except Yom Kippur. Well, Yom Kippur is actually called Shabbos Shabbos, and Yom Kippur is called like the Shabbos of all the Shabboses. So Yom Kippur is like a big Shabbos. Mm. Yom Kippur is like the greatest Shabbos of all, but Yom Kippur, if we think that Shabbos is we think that Shabbos is a time of mercy. Yom Kippur is time of mercy, like times 10. I'll share with you something I wasn't planning on saying, but don't repeat this to anybody who will take this incorrectly. I'll tell.
It's recorded.
That's being recorded, I know, but that's fine. I don't think it goes anywhere. It's just set up automatically. Report. I'll share with you something mind-blowing about Yom Kippur from the sefer called the Magid Meisharim. Now, the Magid Meisharim was written by the Beis Yosef, right, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. And he merited to have a Magid, which is like an angel, that used to come to him all the time and teach him Torah. And he actually wrote down an entire sefer of all the things that this angel taught him. So we have the sefer written down, an unbelievable thing, where you have an angel called a Magid coming down from heaven, and he used to tell the Beis Yosef all sorts of things about his life, and he knew him clearly, like, you know, his children, and he told them, oh, this morning, you got up a minute late. They were pretty angry at you up there. Fix it. It was pretty scary. We're talking about the Beis Yosef on his level, you know. Then he said, today you were having like an argument, like in Shulchan Aruch with the Rambam and the Rush, and in Shemayim, they liked what you said. And, you know, he gave him like a day-to-day report of what was going on. So, it's a pretty amazing sefer. So the Magid, the angel, asked a question like this. And he said, Yom Kippur is the holiest day of the year. Right? I think we could say that. Kippur is the holiest day of the year. Now, Shabbos, what happens if somebody desecrates Shabbos? What's his punishment? What's the punishment if somebody bemazes it intentionally with two witnesses and with warning, desecrates Shabbos?
A good stoning.
A good stone. Skila. And that's the most harsh, that's the strictest of all punishments in this world that we have. What happens if somebody desecrates Yom Kippur? What does he get? Karis. Karis is nowhere near as stringent as Skila, stoning. Skila is way worse. It's clear in many places. Skila is the worst. Karis is a damn breed. Karis means the person will die young. But, you know, says different ages, we should give him for it. But ask this angel, how could it be that the holiest day of the year has a downgraded punishment for those who desecrate it? And Shabbos, which you would think is not as holy as Yom Kippur, has a bigger punishment than Yom Kippur. How could that be? It's a good question. So listen to what this angel revealed. And this is pretty scary. And he said like this. He says that on Yom Kippur, there's such a downpouring of ratzon, of mercy. There's so much mercy, which in the nature of the day inherently is coming down, that will even downgrade the punishment of somebody who desecrates it from Sekila only to Karis. Isn't that crazy? Mm-hmm. That means, of course, Yom Kippur should really, somebody who desecrates it should be Sekila, like Shabbos. It should be worse than Shabbos. But Yom Kippur is such a day of mercy where we're accessing Hashem's true desires. True desire is not to punish. Doesn't want to punish. So yes, the guy desecrated Yom Kippur, but there's so much mercy that it will even make the sin itself on Yom Kippur less. Pretty,
wow.
Pretty incredible. Like I say, this can't be repeated to somebody who will not understand this. It means, oh, so Yom Kippur is a free day. Oh, there's mercy. It's almost like, you know, you sin and you automatically get a pass. And then Karis isn't great too. You know, don't try Karis. Not a good try, but not Sekila. But the point is that when we access Hashem's true desire, we never get punishment. We always get mercy. That's really what his ratzon is. But the judgment's gotta be there. If there's no judgment, we're not gonna choose well. The trick is to access, to bypass it. The trick is to get to his true judgment. So in the week, we do it with a shofar. And that's how we say, this is my desire. So you don't need a judgment. Don't worry. I'm here. I'm your servant. I'm your son. Like we say in, Hayom Haris Olam, today is the birthday of the world. We say, Im Kavanim, we come to you as children. Im Kavanim, we come to you as servants. Im Kavanim, if we're like children, Rachamenu, have mercy on us, like a father has mercy on a child. And if we're like servants, then our eyes are looking up to you, Achet Chanein, until you favor us. And you give us a good judgment. That means we're here. God, we're here. have children, like servants, you name it. We're here. We're here for you. Don't worry. You don't need to judge us. We're here. The purpose of judgment is to get us here. And we're here. And we do that with the shofar. And Shabbos, Shabbos itself opens up those gates of mercy. But we still need to do one thing. So having said that, there's still one thing that we need to do. And that is, we don't have so much time to expound on it. I just want to maybe take the next 3 minutes to talk about a point which I believe is very much looked over on Rosh Hashanah. Maybe I'm going to make a game time decision. I'm going to stop that over there. That means that's that. I'm going to talk about a point related, but just I want to share this with you as a point in itself. The core basis of the tefillah, of the prayer on Rosh Hashanah, is when we say the verses, 10 verses that talk about malchus, kingship, then we say 10 verses that talk about zichronus, remembrance, and then there's 10 verses where we talk about shofar. These 30 verses that we say, that is the core of the prayer of the day. The 10 verses of kingship, the 10 verses of remembrance, and the 10 verses of shofar. This is what we say in our private Shemona Esrei. And then the Chazan repeats it in the Chazar Sashatz, in the repetition. So we say this, we say it once, and the Chazan repeats it again. This is the core. The core of the day is kingship, accepting Hashem's kingship. Zichronus means realizing that He knows everything we're doing, and He remembers every action and every thought and every word that came out of our mouth. And shofar is the shofar blowing where we express what our true desire is. Now, if you go through the Shemona Esrei, it's worth it to take a look at it before, because a lot of times these verses just look like dry or just like you just read them. And we don't always realize that this is the core of the prayer. Everything else is an introduction. But the core of the day is when we say over these verses. And I understand the reason for it, but it always strikes me as strange that in the repetition, then, so to speak, the chazan, whoever's leading, will normally, you know, make much more of a deal out of the introduction and the things that we sing before. And then when we get to these verses, it's a little bit boring. So, you know, I'm guilty of this as much as anyone. We just rip through it. And it's a little bit like, you know, making a huge deal out of the introduction. And then when you get to the main chorus, it's like, all right, guys, let's go. You know, really, it's understandable because, you know, it takes a long time and you lose people on it.
You got to make some good songs out of those psukim, and then you
know, I agree with you. There are some. You have Ahoy Abayim Ahu. You have Haven Yarkeli Ephraim. You have like Haleluka. You got some songs in that. But the point what I'm saying is you know there's a reason why. Obviously, you know, it'll take too long. But the point which I think this year, more than any year, is that this year we don't have the shofar on the first day. But when we say the verses of the shofar, that's got to be big. That's got to be what we are saying to Hashem shofar. We're saying these 10 verses of shofar. So Hashem is right that this is what we don't blow the shofar. We don't need to, but we do need to say the verses. Saying those 10 verses of shofar, this every year is the meat, but this year is like the meat of the meat. This year it's like where we are saying to Hashem that we are blowing the shofar to you without the physical shofar, but with our hearts. With our breath, with our words. Just read the verses and look at them. Take a look. We just described the blowing of the shofar. That is the core of our shofar this year. So there's two parts. The first day, we're going to have Shabbos working for us and the verses. Second day, we're going to have the shofar itself because we need it. And we're going to have the verses too. The part that we do. But this year, put it this way. I'm going to stop here. But on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, this year, we're all going to blow the shofar. Normally, you have one person blowing it. This year, where we're saying the verses and that's all we have, we are the ones, every one of us is going to be blowing the shofar this Rosh Hashanah. Second day, we'll leave it to the Malka. Everyone have a Kesiva v'chasima tova, a wonderful, wonderful year full of goodness and blessing and success with everything that we need. And thank you all.